Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big golf show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Beautiful days, cooling nights. And great golf to recap with you here on the program. So tonight, as usual, we're joined by our friends John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey. And we'll have another golf major to talk to you about. So it should be a good time. And a reminder for those of you who are listening to our podcast regularly, we're going to have two shows this week. Tomorrow here on DITCAL, we will have for you the trade deadline show in Major League Baseball. Now, the trade deadline is this weekend, but we'll talk about the moves that have been made so far and what moves are to come. There are some big ones that we still think should be a big deal, and I think the Dodgers have got to make one move in particular. We'll talk about that tomorrow and get into that on the show. And there's some big moves that have already been made. The Diamondbacks made a move. The Nationals made a pretty good move for their bullpen. All that coming up tomorrow here on the program. But now, we get into the world of golf. And it was a big day for Jordan Spieth, who overcame a huge problem off his tee shot in the 13th hole and turned it into a resounding victory over his head-to-head mate, Matt Kuchar. And Jordan Spieth, unbelievably, comes in and wins his third golf major before the age of 24. Incredible. So let's break it all down and introduce our panel to do so. We start with our friend John in Connecticut. John, welcome back to the show. How's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having me back on. Certainly a very exciting tournament to discuss. Looking forward to hearing you, your thoughts, and as well as Mike's thoughts, of course. So glad to be here.
And good to have you here. Let's go to Mike. And Mike, how's it going tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I guess I'll echo John's thoughts there. Just what an exciting tournament we had, and it'll be fun discussing it with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, when this tournament started, I did not really know who to pick as the winner, and to see Jordan Spieth come back after he had his ups and his downs this year, to see him do that and get another major is really remarkable, and it really begins with that 13th hole. I mean, when he hit that tee shot way wide, first, he saw him on the top of the hill. I thought that he shot the shot on the hill. Turns out he actually shot it past the hill a little bit. But he had a really weird line of sight, and they had to spend like 20 minutes trying to figure out how to get the shot off. I'm a little confused at one aspect of it. Maybe we can get into more detail later. But I didn't understand what would have been the difference between that and just taking a penalty stroke and doing the tee shot again. Like, it just seemed like, was it really worth all that just to get the shot off? But I mean, hey, he did it, and he ended up finishing with a 5. So getting a bogey after all that, which could have really just ended his entire tournament chances right there, and then that could have been like an 8, it could have been a 9, but he ended up with a 5, and he took that and used that momentum. Then he got an eagle later in that round on Sunday, and I mean, that eagle putt was like 48 feet. It was a long putt, and from that point on, it was pretty much his tournament, and it was pretty amazing to see the excitement and the levels that we can get to in golf. So let's get everybody's opinion on Jordan Spieth's masterful victory. It wound up being masterful, obviously. It was shaky along the way, but overall, really exciting for golf to see Jordan Spieth go at it and win again. So, John, we'll give it to you first. What did you think of Jordan Spieth's performance this weekend?
I mean, we're kind of running out of, you know, superlatives for this guy. It's just unbelievable. And, you know, it's just, he's not your typical, he's not the best ball striker in the world. That's the whole thing about this. He's not as good of a tee to green player as, say, Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy. I mean, he doesn't hit the ball as far as those guys. He's really not as accurate as those guys, but where he makes his money is he's probably the best in the world around the green, you know, chipping, pitching, scrambling, and certainly putting. And you've seen that as a theme in a number of these wins that he has. He kind of scratches it out. He makes a lot of long putts, and he comes through the clutch. It's like he goes into another gear when he needs to. And you saw that again on Sunday, where it was very uncharacteristic of him over the first 13 holes. He missed at least three or four very makeable putts for par, and he just had nothing going. Then he hits that shot in the 13th, which was literally an amateur could hit that shot. That was like 100 yards right. And, Dave, you're asking the question about the drop and whatnot. And if you saw his ball where it was, he was like on the side of a hill on like almost a 45-degree angle, and it was just a horrible lie. It was a horrible stance. So he decided to take an unplayable lie. And the rules in golf say you can go two club lengths, no nearer the hole, and drop the ball. But obviously that's not going to help him because he's still going to be on the hill. Or you can take that point and go as far back as you want on that line and then drop a ball. The only thing is, in this scenario, is he went into the driving range. And I made the point that in almost every golf tournament I've ever watched on television, the driving range is out of bounds. So apparently at this course it's not. So that really helped him. He was able to drop the ball, on a good lie, hit a good enough shot to be just short of the green, and then made a great up and down to stay bogey. And then that was the first time all week that he was behind. And then he's like, oh, crap, you know, I'm losing the tournament now. It's time to go. And then he just plays the next last five holes and five under and just completely just rips Matt Kuchar's heart out, who probably thought at that point, man, I'm going to win this thing. And then, you know, he just goes on that unbelievable run and I mean, there's really nothing else to say. He's a supreme talent, and I would not be shocked at all to see him when he gets on a run like this to take the PGA in a couple weeks and complete the career Grand Slam. So, just a phenomenal performance, and we can certainly get into the other guys and like what this means for his legacy and this kind of thing. But I guess those are just kind of my initial thoughts on Spieth and his performance all week.
Yeah, it certainly was an incredible performance, and that last round was a real eye opener. It was really a lot of fun to watch, and remarkable that he came back from that. I mean, really, you know, you hit a shot that badly to start the 13th hole, maybe 99 out of 100 golfers. That's it. Like, they're not going to come back from that. But Spieth had incredible mental toughness to overcome that initial bad shot, and he'd been hitting some bad shots off the tee. For much of that round, to come back from that and still come back and to still win and then even win convincingly at the end, that is just something that you just don't see very often in golf. So let's go to Mike for his thoughts on Jordan Spieth this weekend at the Open.
Well, you know, like John said, he's not the longest player. He's not the most accurate guy off the tee. And for now, we're looking at he's about to turn 24, and he has three majors. He's going to be going for the career Grand Slam, and that's putting him in the company of, you know, Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and, you know, a few years ago, Rory McIlroy was, you know, accomplishing this stuff at a similar age. Now, what makes this odd, I think we know why Jordan Spieth is good, but no one with like his sort of makeup he's able to be a dominant player without being this dominant ball striker. And when these guys come along who do this, it's in the mold of a Tiger Woods, in the mold of a Jack Nicklaus, in the mold of a Rory McIlroy. They're just hitting the ball longer, higher, and more accurate than anyone else can. And subsequently, that's why they're able to do it. But, you know, Jordan Spieth, really what it is, and John, you know, made a great point. He definitely is the best around the greens, on the greens. This guy has, like, the mind of a, you know, Champions Tour legend or something. It's like he's been a tour vet for like 30 years. There's no one who is as mentally tough as this guy. There's no one who is able to bounce back from a bad shot or turn around a bad round, you know, into a good one almost instantly. It's like nothing can faze him, and he just has this other gear that he can just switch into out of nowhere, seemingly. And that's what we saw at the end there. Now, on the 13th hole, I do think everyone is maybe overrating that a little bit, because let's be honest, he got very, 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 very lucky that the driving range was in bounds. Like, how the hell is the driving range in bounds? And also that it happened to be on the hole next to the driving range where you could drop into it. Cause basically, you know, he got to hit he took a penalty shot, yet fine. But then you get a 3-iron from the fairway. Now that's not an easy shot, but it's not exactly the most difficult one in the world. And he's able to get up and down, but then he goes on 14 and nearly aces the damn hole when, like, I think there were only like two or three birdies there the entire day going on. I mean, that shot was incredible. And then on the, on 16 hits the green at two and he's got 48 feet. And of course he just, you know, rams it in with speed, and you're just like, oh my god. Yeah, it was just an incredible way to finish there. He goes in a stretch of what, four holes, he played what, 5 under par. So I mean, just what a way to finish. And you know, I'm glad that he was able to win by 3 strokes, because I do think on 13, you know, for how long that took, I do think it was a little bit unfair to Matt Kuchar, but, you know, credit for Jordan Spieth for just going out there and making sure that, you know, he won by multiple strokes, so no one could say that, oh, well, you maybe you deserve a slow play penalty. Because honestly, I think he did, but it's irrelevant at this point. And now heading into the PGA Championship on a course that is tailor-made for Rory McIlroy, you know, I hope we can get to see the showdown at both of them at their best, because that would really be just, if so anything can top what we saw here, it would be that.
That's true, and it is nice to see that Rory McIlroy had a nice finish to his tournament. I mean, he had a bad start in the first round, but in the final round, he was doing pretty well. I think he even had an eagle towards the end, and McIlroy didn't win the tournament, obviously, but, you know, -3 on the final round. Finishing at -5 overall for the tournament. I mean, it was a good place to end for him. So we'll get to him a little bit later. Let's go back to John and some more thoughts on the final two. So, yeah, I am really curious about the ramifications of that shot. It is interesting that the penalty wasn't assessed for... And Mike Francis actually brought this point up, too. Like, why was there not a penalty assessed for the length of play? I do realize that... I didn't realize how bad it was, but... There has been the talk about Spieth being a guy that takes way too long to get off a shot. And that is a problem. I don't like guys that do that, but I didn't realize how bad it was until like these last couple of days. So what would have been some of the other possible outcomes in that situation? Could, if you know, Matt Kuchar wasn't so generous in that situation, could he have just said, hey, you know, like, you know, take it or leave it, you know, you get the penalty stroke? Or I'm not really sure what else could have happened there in that situation. Cause it's like, I was saying at the beginning, why didn't he just, you know, if it was that bad, like, why didn't he just redo the tee shot and just take the penalty from that?
Well, I mean, that's why, I mean, I had thought of that too, Dave, but then, you know, when you think about it, it's a 500-yard par 4 into the wind. I mean, do you really want to hit that tee shot again? Unless you just hit it 100 yards, right? I mean, I don't think,
right.
You know, he did the best option for him. Now, Mike is right when he says he's lucky the driving range was there, because on any other hole on the course, you know, you might be in a gorse bush if you're trying to take that point and go as far back as he did for the drop. So he definitely took advantage of the course layout. And Mike is exactly right. He's extremely smart and he knows the rules, and that's a big part of golf, is knowing how to strategize in scenarios like this. But I don't think, you know, I had mentioned maybe that he could have going back to the tee, but in hindsight, that was probably not a good idea. After you just hit the drive 100 yards right, you're going to go back on the tee to a 500-yard hole into the wind. That would not have been very smart. So I think he did that right. As for Kuchar saying anything, I mean, Kuchar could say whatever he wants. I mean, it's not, you know, nothing's going to happen. He could say, you know, speed up Jordan, and, you know, it's Spieth is going to do whatever he wants at that point. I mean, it's not going to, nothing Kuchar is going to say is going to affect anything, you know, even if he talks to an official. And the interesting thing was they were actually on the clock for slow play before this happened, like a hole or two before. So they were finishing that hole on the 13th, and then the group ahead of them was like three holes ahead on hole 16. So, I you know, if it wasn't the Open Championship, I mean, they might have been assessed with a slow play. But, you know, imagine the controversy if they had been assessed a slow play penalty. Remember how it was so ridiculous when the USGA gave Dustin Johnson that penalty 2 years ago at the U.S. Open? I mean, it would have been that times 10 if Spieth had gotten a slow play penalty for you know, for that. Even though he probably did deserve it, but they're just not going to give one out in that situation. So I think that was a good restraint from them.
Yeah, I agreed on that. I think, I mean, it would be highly unlikely to see such high stakes assessing a penalty of that nature. So let's actually talk about Kuchar, because this is definitely a nice tournament for him as well. But many were speaking about how this is his last shot. He's not exactly a young guy. So let's go to Mike and get your thoughts on his play. I know that we pick on him a lot, but for good reason. I mean, you know, obviously there are character traits that we're not terribly fond of. But as far as Kuchar himself during the tournament and how he did, let's get your thought on Kuchar's performance, Mike.
Just real quickly, back to the, you know, assessing the penalty. I think if you saw 2 weeks ago, John Rahm blatantly, you know, he did basically what Lexi Thompson did with the ball mark. And then the RNA chief guy was like, well, it's not really definitive. So, you know, who cares? We're not assessing him a penalty when he should have been, probably. But, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a better approach. You know, they said, well, what fucking difference did it make anyway? So I think I wasn't surprised that they didn't give him a slow play ruling, because when you saw what Rahm did 2 weeks ago at the Irish Open and how they were kind of like, no, we're not going to give a penalty on that, you knew that they weren't going to give a slow play penalty. But anyway, back to Matt Kuchar. Yeah, we do. You know, it's very interesting for a guy that seems like such a dork walking around, you know, with that goofy smile on his face, which he permanently like has. And when he gives when he gives interviews, he's like talking with a smile, you know, it's got to cause some strain on his facial muscles. But apparently he's like one of the funniest guys on tour and everyone loves him. But, you know, when it comes to him as a golfer, you know, he's just very boring to watch. He's got this flat swing. He doesn't hit it very far. You know, it's just, there's nothing about him that's exciting. I mean, let's be honest. He is a good ball striker. This was a venue that, yeah, you could kind of see how someone with his skill set would do well there. But look, he was three behind going into the final round. I know that, you know, Spieth struggled, you know, quite a bit early, and that Kuchar had a chance. You know, I did not think for 1 second that Matt Kuchar was winning that tournament. He just is not the guy with, you know, the mental makeup really to win as often as he should, because this guy has a lot of top tens, a lot of top fives, a lot of top threes. He's in the mix a lot, but he doesn't win, you know, very much for how often he's been in contention, and he is getting older, so he's slipping a bit. You know, so he seems like a nice guy, but you know, it would not have been as good for golf if Matt Kuchar had won. You know, it's just, unfortunately, that's the truth. So it's a good thing that Spieth won.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I realize that's a strong statement, but I would say that's a very accurate one. I mean, a much more marketable guy here is Spieth. I mean, he's young, he's got, you know, he's already got the success from the past. He can make some spectacular shots. I saw one during the Travelers Championship to win that a few weeks ago. So he certainly has the stuff. Let's go to John for any final for any additional thoughts on Matt Kuchar's performance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's very consistent. I mean, he's in the, like Mike said, he's a good fantasy golf player because he's very consistent. You know, you're going to get at least a top 25 out of him every week. So in that regard, he's a good choice. But he just, you know, I think he has 6 or 7 tour wins, and for a guy that is that consistent and is and around the top 20 of the leaderboard, I mean, he doesn't win. And you know, I hate to say it for him because he doesn't seem like a nice guy and all, but this was probably his best chance to ever win a major. I don't think he's ever going to get this close again. You know, it just, he just doesn't have that type of game to, I guess, take it to the next level to win one of these events. That's why, I mean, he did win the Players, but again, you know, it's not really a true major. I mean, that is a difficult course, but again, it's one of those courses where it fits his skill set. You have to be very accurate, and he certainly is accurate, and he's just a solid player. He's not a great, great player. Like, if you asked me who's the best player to never win a major, I probably wouldn't say Matt Kuchar, even though a lot of people would put him up there. So, I mean, a great tournament for him, and, you know, it's got a sting because it certainly is, like I said, probably his best chance to ever win one. But, you know, that's how it goes. I'm sure, you know, like, Phil Mickelson's not crying for him. I mean, he played in the era of Tiger Woods and was second a number of times. So I guess it happened to Kuchar here when, you know, you have a generational talent like Spieth who just turns it on and wins the tournament. So, you know, we'll see. You know, Kuchar might pick up a couple more tour wins, certainly before his career is over. But I think this was probably his best chance to win a major. And it's sad for him that he didn't come through.
Yeah, I mean, as we were saying, I mean, this might be it. This might be his best. This might have been his best shot, and there may not be another one. And there's a pretty good chance there will not be another one for the rest of this for the rest of his career. But he's got a nice career. I mean, Kuchar's got, you know, numerous wins. He certainly has racked up enough money and endorsements. I think he does endorsements for Skechers, and so, you know, it's not all bad. Anyway, let's get to surprises and disappointments from the Open Championship in Royal Birkdale. We'll begin with Mike in North Jersey.
Surprises and disappointments. Well, you know, not to toot my own horn a little bit, but going into this week, you know, I know we didn't do a prediction beforehand, but I thought Spieth was going to win. And especially when Colin Montgomery did really a great job on the Golf Channel, you know, giving you some insight into the course. And he basically said that, listen, on every hole, you can miss on one side because of how the rough is. Now, if you look at Spieth and where he's done well, yeah, that's a lot like Augusta. There's always a way that if you know where you can miss, you can get around the course. So, but I'm getting a little bit off topic there. So, I just thought it was this was tailor made for Jordan Spieth. So, him winning was not a surprise at all to me. He also made me some money in a FanDuel. So, thank
you,
Jordan.
Oh, nice.
Good job out of you.
Good stuff.
Let's see. Who is the biggest disappointment here? You know, I guess we have to say Dustin Johnson. Just like look at how dominant Dustin Johnson looked, and then he allegedly slips and falls before Augusta, and he's just not come back at all from that. And I guess the next guy, although, you know, really when you look at the course and his age, and you can kind of see why he didn't do well. But, you know, John Rahm was going off as one of the I think he was like the second or third betting favorite. There was a lot of money on him, you know, coming off that just dominant win at the Irish Open. But, you know, on a course that's going to take driver out of play on a lot of holes and with a guy who runs hot, you know, maybe in hindsight, you know, the expectations for Rahm were maybe a little bit too much. So I would say that you have to give those two as disappointments. Jason Day, I'm not going to say is a disappointment. You know, his mother has cancer. His head's not there. So, you know, we're going to give him a pass. Surprises. Lee Hailton, the Chinese player, finishing in third place. You know, I don't think anyone saw that coming. You know, that's good for the game. He shot a 63 in the fourth round. And, of course, that was the old record, but we saw Brandon Grace fire a 62, which this is amazing. The all-time scoring record in a major has finally been broken, and no one's talking about it. It's like, who cares, basically? So, you know, and I didn't see much of his round, but I saw the replay, and it just seemed like he just holed every single putt from, like, 25 feet or more. So, you know what? You know, good for him for accomplishing that, but, like, let's be honest. Johnny Miller was right. Like, that 62 was not as good as his 63, although it is quite, it is pretty funny that Johnny Miller had to sit there and watch it, and basically it just has sour grapes over it. Although, you know, I can't blame him. I wouldn't want to see my record get broken either. But, So, anyone else that was a big surprise? Looking at the leaderboard here, who would I? I don't know who Matthew Southgate is, so I guess we can get him a surprise. And I guess another player to bring up is, we made fun of him on our U.S. Open podcast, is Xander Schauffele. But we have to apologize because. Yeah, top 20 this week. You know, you had that win at the Greenbrier. So, you know, maybe this is a guy who's just coming into his own a little bit, and, you know, we should maybe give him a little respect. So I doubt he listens, but, Xander, I'm sorry that I didn't know who you were, but I know now. Anyone else? You know, Phil Mickelson just missing the cut by like a million strokes. But you know what? Once Phil decided to skip the U.S. Open, now saying, well, I'm going to my daughter's graduation. You know, the guy has enough money that I'm sure he could have found a way to have the graduation moved. Once he did that, you can kind of see that, you know, maybe he's kind of thinking, you know, I'm past it. Because he is 47 years old. But, you know, he did just a complete no-show performance from him. The other big, real big disappointment, I would say in general, it was a little disappointing that we only really had two guys with a chance to win it at the end. But other than that, nothing really jumps off the board at me for surprises and disappointments, really.
Yeah, I guess I think that's a pretty good list you have there, Mike. So let's see if John has any.
Just real, Dave, real quick. Just in an open championship with so much being determined by the weather, with kind of quirky courses, you know, it's hard to really come up with surprises and disappointments because you know you almost expect them to happen at events like these.
That is true. You know, I know there was a lot of talk about. And I saw it too on the first round. I mean, it was nasty. Like it was raining, it was windy all over. It's tough to. I think there are just people making jokes about how can you hit into this wind. I mean, it was pretty rough. I mean, so I wouldn't be surprised if anybody. I don't think anybody had a great round in the first round. I mean, it did say that Spieth started. The reason why Spieth won was in part because he was so hot in the beginning of the tournament in the first round. But a lot of other people didn't have it so good. I mean, people were. All over the place on the leaderboard. So, totally agree with you on that, Mike. So, John, we'll get your thoughts now on surprises and disappointments. And if you want to add some thoughts about the course, that's fine as well.
Yeah, Dave, I think you're thinking of round two was the really wet, crazy.
Oh, it might have been round
day.
Two. Yeah, I think you're right. Yep.
Yeah, because I think there was only I want to say 7 or 8 rounds that were under par that day, and Spieth was playing in the worst of the conditions. And he somehow shot one under, which was just an unbelievable score. If you look at the scores from round two, like just for example, Justin Thomas, it was like 4 under round one, and then he shoots 80 round two and missed the cut. That was just like the kind of scores that were out there if you got the ball in the wrong spot. And it's just, I guess, a luck of the draw with how things how things work sometimes with the scores. But certainly it did not take down Spieth. I'll give you one big disappointment. And, you know, he kind of hurt me on my FanDuel team. Tommy Fleetwood was hyped, you know, very hugely coming into this event because this is like his home course. I mean, he had that great week at the U.S. Open. He played great the last few weeks on the European Tour. And then he comes out on round one and shoots 5 over 76. And six over 76, to par 70. So that really just took him out of it from day one. He rebounded it in that monsoon conditions with a 1 under, which was awesome. And then he has a 4 under on Saturday on that really easy conditions, and then an even par Sunday. So he ends up actually tied for 27th, which isn't terrible considering the way he started. But I just think there's just so much pressure on him right from the beginning that he just couldn't handle it. And if he shoots 3 or 4 under in round one, I mean, you never know what, you know, what could happen. So he was definitely a disappointment and someone that, you know, you figured could at least get into the top 10, but that opening round just killed him. I agree with Dustin Johnson being a disappointment, but like Mike said, he really hasn't done much of anything. And it's going to be an interesting race now for player of the year. You've got to say Spieth is the favorite, 3 wins in a major. I mean, I know DJ has 3 wins too, but there's no major for him. So you got to make Spieth the favorite for now, unless, you know, he wins, DJ would win the PGA or anything with the FedEx Cup, and that would certainly change. But for now, Spieth is certainly the player of the year. I thought Ricky Fowler was a disappointment. He usually plays well on these links courses, and he really couldn't get much of anything going all week. He had 4 rounds around 70. You know, that's not going to get it done when the winning score is 12 under. So I don't know what's going on with him. Again, he's like a perennial disappointment. You know, keep expecting him to break through and win one of these things, but he just can't seem to get the job done. Lee was probably the biggest surprise, of course, of the tournament. And it was funny, NBC on the scoreboard had his name backwards. They had Lee Haotong instead of Haotong Lee, and I can't fault them for making the mistake, but that was kind of funny. The young kid from Canada was pretty impressive, Austin Connolly. I guess he's only 20 years old, and he works with the same coach as Jordan Spieth. And I guess him and Spieth are friends. So, and he plays on the European Tour, which is interesting. A lot of young Americans are going that route. The fields aren't quite as strong, and you can, you know, gain eligibility into a number of events if you do well over there. So he had a pretty impressive first 3 rounds. Sunday he wasn't that great, but still, you know, tied for 15th in the Open Championship is pretty good for his in his young career. Let's see who else here. I think we covered it pretty well. Those were the guys I wanted to mention. Sergio Garcia, another guy who I thought might do well. He always plays well at the Open. Just didn't have anything this week. All, you know, 4 rounds around 70, and it's just not going to get it done. I think we covered it pretty well. Congrats to Mike for the FanDuel win. One of my sleepers this week was a guy from New Zealand, Ryan Fox, had 3 straight top tens on the European Tour and missed the cut by 1 shot. If he had made the cut and given me anything on the weekend, I could have been up there in the top 3, but there goes the breaks of when you play fantasy golf and you're, you know, 1 shot can change the difference. So, but it's very, very fun times trying to follow all the players and all the various shots. So, certainly good stuff with that indeed.
Yeah, I love the FanDuel talk, John, because your comment that 1 shot can change the landscape or make the difference is also true in baseball. Like, 1 swing of the bat, you hit a home run. I mean, sometimes that can be a 20 or even a 40-point difference in the standings of the FanDuel contest. And I've seen it firsthand. I've seen it, you know, with other players. So it's really exciting that way where you can have a group that can be that tight, where it can just anything could happen to really alter the landscape. And with that said, kudos to Mike. Way to go, buddy. Nice job. I'm assuming this is Leo's FanDuel that he started up earlier in the week, but I'm glad, number one, that they filled it up, because I wanted to make sure that there was a field. And way to go. I mean, obviously all the knowledge of golf you've had over the years has paid off.
Dave, I'll be honest. I mean, except for having Spieth in, which I thought you had to do, a lot of it's luck. Like, I was tinkering the lineup constantly, you know, I had Justin Thomas in at one point, but I found a way to redo it to get him out and get Brooks Koepka in. So that helped a lot. So that's just how it goes. But it is fun because it's like I had Hideki Matsuyama, and then in the final round, he starts off and he hits his tee shot out of bounds, and I'm like screaming at the TV, like, are you really going to fuck me like this? Come on. So yeah, it can be fun with how something like that happens. It's like, come on. Are you kidding? It's like if I had lost because of that, I don't know. And it's a very good thing that Jordan Spieth decided to get his act together down the stretch. Or I don't know. I wasn't following that closely to see how I was doing because otherwise, I wouldn't enjoy the tournament as much. But it was nice to win a little bit, so you can play a little bit more, play with some house money in the upcoming duels, I guess.
Good times. Well, Mike, let's get to it. We have the telecast to break down. What did you think of the telecast this year from NBC?
Pretty solid. What you really have to do, the thing that is unique about this, with what NBC does is because of the Golf Channel, they're able to get, start at 1:30 in the morning on Thursday. So you actually see like literally the entire round. So now granted at the beginning, it does get a bit tedious because, there's only a couple guys on the course, but it's pretty much the stock NBC group once you get to the weekend, especially during, what I guess you would call the prime hours of the event. But, they have rotating announcing crews because they have to just because they're on the air for so many hours. But so you get Tirico in the mix, which, you always had him on ESPN. So, he does a good job. Then you get your Dan Hicks and Johnny Miller. So it's all people that we're familiar with, voices that we recognize. No real complaints. Bones McKay, I saw they added, Phil Mickelson's former caddy. To be honest, I really didn't listen all that much to what he said. So he didn't say anything to me that really stood out as stupid. But I don't know. I could have been paying a little bit better attention to the broadcast because really the one that I pay close attention to is Fox. Cause I'm like, well, let's see how they're going to fuck something up here. I'm just kind of waiting for the train wreck from them. But, it's really just such a good job by them to really, just allow, you can just sit there and watch golf for, frankly, an unhealthy amount of time if you want to. So no complaints there. That alone, that'll make up for anything that, might be said that's dumb or some bad camera work or whatever. Just, if you're going to let me watch basically the entire frickin' Open Championship as if I were there, just thanks to them because, there's no one else doing that. And it would be nice if, we don't need to see the entire tournament, but, maybe the Masters or, the PGA Championship took note of that and said, hey, let's try to, get some more hours of coverage on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I mean, the amount of coverage that they have is really impressive. We talked about that last year, and it's just carried a little bit more of that this year. So very good stuff. Let's go to John and get your thoughts about the telecast for the Golf Open Championship this year.
Yeah, no complaints. I mean, you guys are right. You can pretty much see if you're like a real sicko, you could literally watch just about every single shot of the event. It'd be interesting to get thoughts from someone on the West Coast like Andy in Seattle, who I'm sure watched the coverage. And, out there, it starts at 10:30 at night. You could watch, the first 2 or 3 hours before you go to sleep. So, and that's just a tremendous job by them. And then you had some of the Golf Channel crew with Faldo and Terry Gannon. They always do a great job every week. So, you can't complain with anything NBC did this week. They added that new, that playing through kind of thing on the commercial where they would show the split screen where they would show the commercial on the right side and on the left side, they would still show you the shots and the action. It was a little hard to see, who was actually hitting the shot and the score. I don't know how they could improve on that, but I guess you can't complain when you're actually seeing something on the screen instead of a full screen commercial. And that could probably be a good trendsetter for other sports. Just like, you know, I know the NFL is, you know, going through ways to improve the television quality of their broadcast. And I think that's something that they might look into. But so I thought that was a kind of a neat little thing, even if it was kind of hard to see like exactly what shot and what hole they were on, but certainly better than seeing, seeing full commercials. That's for sure.
I was very intrigued by the playthrough because it made me wonder whether, whether it made the pace of the entire golf, I mean, that 13th hole notwithstanding, but I wonder if it made the pace of the event in general go faster. Because I often remembered, oh gosh, this seems to be moving along faster than, and this, again, this is all before 13th hole, but this is moving along faster than I typically would expect with golf. And I wonder if it's because they actually stopped to wait for the commercial break during regular events. I don't actually know. I don't know if they stop at all. I wonder if they just take the break and while they're taking the break, they're walking over to the ball. I really don't know what the story is. I mean, I've even attended a couple of golf events, and I still really don't have any idea what the situation is. My hypothesis was that maybe because they do in Great Britain, they televise it on the BBC or something, and they don't take as many commercial breaks that the American network has to take, you know, do things like this in order to not completely lose the viewer from what's happening on the course. I really don't know. But it was very interesting to see that. And it seemed to really make you feel like you were moving along with the action and you weren't losing sight of anything. I think that was a great feature. So, Mike, any further comments on the playthrough feature that NBC Sports was using this year for the Open Championship?
You know, it's better than... Yeah, obviously having commercials, but at the same time, there is a slippery slope with this. What you see a lot of times with golf is they'll kind of, you know, front and back load commercials, so that like when you're headed down the stretch, for instance, you're not going to see any commercials. But you know, if you start with this. You know, having the commercial and the play still going on, you know, they do that for Formula One. I know I've seen that from, and NBC covers that at least. So it's something that I've seen before in other sports, but what it does allow for you to do is run more commercials. And, you know, if I can just see it getting to a point where it gets to be too much of it. So I don't know what to exactly make of it because, yeah, it's better than having it stop and just having to see a commercial. But, you know, if at the same time, remember, these are television companies. They're trying to make as much money as possible. So if really the goal is not trying to make it better for the viewer. I think really the goal is they're trying to figure out how can we fit in more commercials without pissing off the viewer enough. So, yeah, let's just hope it kind of stays where it is right now. Because, you know, you don't want to like have, for instance, you know, like, half of the coverage time, especially during like critical moments of the tournament, being small screen. So yeah, it's an interesting thing, but I can see it going like both, like it's better than a regular commercial, but I can easily see it like in a couple of years time becoming something that we're complaining about. So I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. And I agree there. It's always very, very dicey when you get into the area of commercials and commercialization and in-game promos. I've spoken before about how out of hand it is with baseball when they just do where every fucking thing in the broadcast is sponsored. Like this first pitch is sponsored by Lowe's. The second pitch is sponsored by avocados, and, you know. It's just like it's getting ridiculous. I think the Yankees have some kind of in-game promo for every inning, and it's been that way for a few years now. And I'm like, man, we have got to calm down with this stuff. It's like, you know, this coaching visit. Actually, I think that is one. The coaching visit is one of them. So, yeah, I agree. I'm with you, Mike. It's just it's cool, but, you know, let's see where it goes. So, John, I wanted to bring up something we were doing in the last major recap show, and I'm wondering if you remember this, but we were talking about, we had a random question at the end. I wonder if we addressed this already. We may have, but if you remember, I asked both of you guys, what was the one show that you saw that you said, man, that is the stupidest show on TV? And I'm wondering if you can remember that query, and would you have a response at this point to that question? Like, what is just one of the worst shows? Like, this is, and then you, like, when you saw it, you're like, this is the worst TV show ever. We'll interrupt with this and we'll get into future PGA stuff. But where did you have a response for that?
No, I do remember the question, Dave. I hadn't had really any time to think about it.
Oh, okay.
So I apologize.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. And you know what? Honestly, I forgot about it too until we were doing the show right now. So I'm like, oh, wait, I should ask John to see if he remembers that. I can get back to you on that when we do the college football preview show. So we'll
all right. I will make a note in my phone and then that'll remind me to think about it just for you.
It's good that you don't know in a way, because it means that you have been kept away from bad TV for a while, which is
exactly
good, which is good commentary on your taste in television. So, all right, let's get to the what's ahead. Then we'll go back to Mike and let's get a look at the upcoming schedule.
Well, they have the Canadian Open this week, and I haven't really looked at who's in the field, really, to be honest. It'll be at Glen Abbey, you know, one of the early Jack Nicklaus designs. So see what happens there. Of course, we're going to have the WGC Bridgestone coming up, which will be the week before the PGA Championship. So... And I always think that was interesting how they put a WGC the week before a major championship. I don't know. So we'll see what happens with that. Obviously, the field will be good. To be honest, that course there, Firestone, I think it's a really tired layout. When they opened it up, you know, for how long it was in like the 1960s, it's like, whoa, we've never seen anything like this. Now you just see it. It's like every hole is like in the same direction. They're all up and down. And it just gets kind of boring, that course, to be honest, although it's a good field. And, yeah, then, of course, we'll have the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, which, you know, they've redone, I think, six holes they redid. But the finishing stretch, at least to my knowledge right now, I probably should have double-checked this, but I didn't. So, you know, maybe Funhouse can get me on that, although he's been banned from Twitter, so it won't happen. So I think that finishing stretch, what they call the green mile, is the same. So I think a lot of the changes were on the front. I know the first hole got changed, which the first hole was, you know, pretty, like, blah. So I don't know. We'll see what changes they made there. But, you know, that's a good, very good layout. And it's one that definitely favors big hitters. And then after that, of course, we're going to have the FedEx Cup playoffs coming up. And I guess the sponsorship deals have all changed, because the Barclays is now the Northern Trust. The Deutsche Bank, which is in Boston, is, I forget what they changed the name to. It's something else. Yeah, and then, you know, the Tour Championship is still the Tour Championship. But, you know, it always feels weird saying the Northern Trust, because I think of the Northern Trust as being, you know, Riviera. But now the Northern Trust is what was the Barclays. And they're having it at, Glen Oaks, which... you know, frankly, I had never heard of that course before. It's on Long Island, and it just seems weird with the quality of golf courses that you have in the New York City metro area that they're going there. I don't know why. Maybe I don't know that much about the course, but compared to like Ridgewood, which for years, which was considered a potential U.S. Open site, Liberty National, which, you know, yeah, the course is a little bit quirky, but the views are amazing. Plainfield, which is a perennial top 100 course in the country, and then Bethpage Black, kind of a step down, so that's a little bit disappointing. But yeah, a lot of big time golf coming up, and you know, for some of the for a lot of players, this is a you know, an important stretch here to you know, try to qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs. So you know, besides the obvious, the headliners, you know, if you want to watch some guys trying to grind to, you know, keep their tour cards these next few weeks, especially when they do that Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, that's always it's always a little bit interesting to watch, just to see guys who are, you know, trying to get into the FedEx Cup playoffs and, you know, trying to avoid relegation, basically, or having to play in that web.com tour thing at the end. So a lot of big time events, and going to be a lot of stressful rounds for, you know, maybe some of the lesser known players on that bubble.
Well, that's interesting. So there's a fight to stay alive in the tour, basically. I love the concept. I didn't realize that. Yeah, there is that actual, there's that wrinkle of relegation. I mean, the web.com tour is the tour that's for all the guys that aren't good enough to be on the regular tour, but aren't old enough to be on the Champions Tour. So it's kind of funny. That's like the minor leagues of golf in a way. So let's go to John and get your look at what's coming up as well. Any thoughts on these upcoming events, John? We mentioned, by the way, before I hand it to you, we mentioned that this course, as Mike stated, is tailor made for Rory McIlroy, and we also have the feel that that Jordan Spieth should be a big favorite in this PGA Championship. So that does set up pretty nicely. We'll see if it pans out. Now, John, we'll get your thoughts on the remaining events this upcoming PGA Tour season.
Yeah, Mike mentioned the field this week at the Canadian Open. I'll just tell you that three of the guys I'm playing on FanDuel this week are Cameron Percy, Ricky Barnes, and Peter Malinotti. So that will tell you the depth of the field in the tournament this week. So you need to pick eight players on FanDuel. So when those are your last three guys, you know it's not very pretty. Dustin Johnson is playing, so he has to be in your lineup or else you're not doing anything. But yeah, so a very weak field in Canada. But hey, it's golf, and I have a FanDuel lineup, so I'll certainly be watching. You know, then you have the WGC. I agree with Mike about that course. It just seems like there's no, I guess, charm or it's just not very interesting. It's just back and forth and back and forth. Each par four is long and straight. And I mean, there's no, they had that one long par five that's like 680 yards. And Gary McCord goes crazy every year when someone inevitably will hit the green, like one guy will do it and he'll go wild. But other than that, it's just a very boring course, but it's saved by the fact that, you know, it's the best 70 players in the world. So that pretty much saves the tournament, and you know, and no one really shoots that low, which is kind of good. You don't want to see 20 under at a World Golf Championship event. I mean, the winner will probably be around 9 or 10 under, which is good for that. And then the PGA, McIlroy has just dominated on this course when they play the regular tour event there in May. Ricky Fowler has also won on this course. I think this will be a good course for John Rahm too, because we've mentioned on the last two majors, he just, anything that kind of gets in his head and he just starts off bad, he can't recover. This course is definitely not like that. I think he can overpower it with his length. So I think this should be set up perfectly for a number of the top players, and hopefully they'll bring their games, and it'll be a really exciting event. And those last three holes, like Mike had said, just very entertaining. You have a long par four on 16, par three on 17 with water and play on three sides. And then the 18th is a pretty brutal par four with a little creek down the left that certainly comes into play. And then a really tough second shot. So just a great finish. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see the other changes that they made. I too am not aware exactly of what they've done to the course, but even before this, it was one of the better courses on tour. So that should be a really good tournament. And like I said, it sets up well for a lot of the top players. And of course you have the FedEx Cup, you know, always something. I look at the FedEx Cup as it's my bridge to like football season, because once you watch the first 3 weeks of the FedEx Cup, the NFL season is here. So that's why I enjoy the FedEx Cup, and we'll certainly
we'll certainly follow it, and you know, see who comes out on top. It should be pretty entertaining like it is every year. And then I guess I'll mention on a personal note, Dave, I take my annual vacation to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. That'll be happening in September. However, on the way there, I am going to be stopping in Seattle for a couple days. We'll see if we can connect with Andy for something, watch some games or something. But I'm actually going to be playing a round of golf at Chambers Bay that hosted the U.S. Open. So I'm very, very excited about that.
That's awesome. That is, that's a beautiful course. And Andy's played there before, so he can tell you all about it. But, we had the U.S. Open there several years ago. That is fantastic. My goodness. LOL Seattle. I hope you enjoy.
Yeah,
it's probably going to rain, right?
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I guess there hasn't been rain in 30 days. And when I go there, it'll be, two monsoons, those 2 days. But, hey, we'll deal with it.
That's a good time. I'm excited to see how you do over there. Maybe I don't know what your handicap is, but hopefully you're right around your handicap at a pretty tough course like that. So,
well, yeah, I figure if I can break 90, which my game has been pretty good this year. On a normal course, if I shot 88, I'd be pretty upset. On Chambers Bay, I think I'd be happy with an 88. So that's what I'll shoot for.
Sweet. Yeah, and hopefully pictures too. So that'd be fun to take a look at some of the shots of that beautiful course. It really is nice. So good stuff, Mike. Any other golf adventures for you coming up this summer?
No. Well, I on a bit of a personal note, both of you guys know my father passed away. So my sister, who has never played golf before. We were in Hilton Head because that's what we used to do, as kids every year. We went on vacation there. Basically, I remember once we were there for 2 weeks, I played seven rounds of golf with my dad as like an 8-year-old. We scattered he was cremated. So we scattered some of his ashes along the 18th green at Harbortown. So it'll be nice to... nice memory of him every time that tournament's on now. And also a few on the, it was the Ocean Course. Now it's Atlantic Dunes by Davis Love. So that was kind of my golf adventure. A bit sad, but at the same time, it's almost like you can feel them with you when you play. So that was my golf adventure. Interesting, Davis Love, I know we kind of rip on him, but, he did do a good job with this course, although the greens there, oh, my God, the amount of slope and undulation and the fact that they were aerating them, you could not putt at all. But I hadn't played much golf anyway, so I didn't keep score. It wouldn't have been it. It was basically playing with a set of clubs that, my dad bought basically for me without me really knowing about it. But anyway, it was like every shot was either very good or very bad. There was no in between. So although I did get some, juice going on the back nine a little bit. So I don't know. It's been tough to get out on the course a little bit because that was always my thing with him was golf. So haven't been playing as much recently and John, that sounds like a hell of a trip, Chambers Bay. And my understanding about that course is that there are a lot of tee boxes, so that if you play something that isn't crazy, that it's not that difficult. Well, it's obviously still difficult, but I don't know, are you planning to play the tips or close to it, or what's the plan?
Hey, yeah, I am not playing tips. I want to at least have fun out there. I looked at their scorecard and they recommend the certain tee box to play based on your drive. And I can play in the drive, which is if you hit your ball, your drive 220 to 280 yards, which is I'd be like in the middle. I'd be like 250, 260. I can play. It's not the men's. It's like one above the men's, but one below the. Like the championship. So I think it's like
or 6,400 yards. I think that's where I'm going to play it. And the interesting thing about that course is there is no golf carts allowed. So it's a walking facility only. And if I so choose, I can have a caddy carry my clubs. So I might take advantage of that just for the fact to say once in my life I had a caddy. But maybe we'll see how the money situation is looking. But, it certainly looks like obviously a beautiful course from TV, and I can't wait to get out there and play it. And actually they gave me a great deal. If you play it like on a sunset rate, they call it, the tee time is like at close to 3 p.m. It's only $100 to play that course. So I can't beat that price.
Yeah, that's incredible. $100 to play a U.S. Open course. Wow.
Yeah, so I had to jump on it. I'm like, all right, I have to play this course. So should be interesting. Like I said, my game has been really good this year. Well, early in the spring, it wasn't that good. I guess that's kind of what you get after you don't play all winter. But over the last 2 months, I have a Wednesday golf league, and I've been breaking 40 in that. And then I've had a couple rounds of like 76 and 78. So I guess I'm certainly not expecting that at Chambers Bay, but anything under like 90, I will certainly take. So maybe I'll surprise myself and I'll break 80. That would be pretty cool. But anything under 90, I'll be happy, especially playing from that distance.
90 would be pretty sweet, man. Because I'd be happy with under 90 on any course. I'd be happy with under 90 at the mini putt course. So to be fair, so good luck to you, man. I'm very pumped. We're all very pumped for you. And Mike. Just to recap some of the stuff, a moving tribute to your father. I think that's really awesome, and I mentioned it to you off air, but that's certainly our thoughts with you during this difficult time. Hopefully, like you said, you made the most of that situation. And as has been said, it's happened in my family too. Loved ones have come and gone, and I think it's always interesting to note that they're always with you, and I think that's just my comment on that. So we'll give it for you guys for final thoughts. We'll go to John first. Final thoughts as far as – well, actually, let's go to Mike first. Final thoughts on the world of golf as it is today.
When we were first started doing this podcast, in 2011, I know John and I both had the, I think, reputation of being, irrational Tiger haters. Well, guess what? Suck on one, because we were right. We were right. This guy, I actually feel kind of sorry for him, because he's not going to be able to play golf again with the amount of injuries that he had. But, just the... I think between now, we've seen McIlroy win 4 majors and then Spieth win 3 majors. So all this talk that, the parity of the game now, blah, blah. No, dominant players still are going to win things. So all that bullshit that you heard, well, if he had not played in the Tiger Woods era, he would have, like for Vijay Singh, well, he would have won 6. No, it was the most bullshit story. It's like the most bullshit fucking take that they came up with. And also the idea that he intimidated people off the court. No, he was just better than, he was better, so much better than everyone else at his best. That's why he was so good. But, and then just the, if you were someone who would only watch when Tiger Woods played, like, why would you not want to watch now with what Spieth did and what McIlroy did a few years ago? I mean, yeah, Grant, I don't think either one of them will end up as good as Tiger Woods, because, as I said, Tiger Woods is at worst the third greatest golfer in the history of golf. Now, that's not an insult. People say it is. It's not. But... Now, we've seen 2 young guys come out now here and win a combined 7 majors. So this is exciting, and they both have a flair for the dramatic. And it's different. It's contrasting styles. So, I don't know exactly what the TV ratings are, but Tiger Woods is basically, he's gone from the scene. And look at what a great, look at where golf is, at least from a... on the tour and the competition, look where it is right now. We're in this is just an absolutely great time for the game these last few years. You know, you had McIlroy win back-to-back majors, and then Spieth come right back and win back-to-back majors. Like, look what's happened, and look at all these, look at all this talent that's coming out. You know, Rahm coming out now, and then you have Dustin Johnson and Jason Day, who, you know, are just as talented as it gets, but, you know, are kind of a bit, you know, shaky. And, you know, it's just, it's great to see just such a revival in the, that golf has, you know, it's just in such a good place right now. And really, we're set up for an exciting, really just an exciting few years coming up here, because really the big question now is who's going to wind up with the better career, Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth? So that's going to be kind of our, well, you never know, because, you know, golf really, it's a funny sport. Sometimes, if you look throughout history, sometimes guys just stop winning all of a sudden, and it's very odd. But that's happened with almost everybody. But really, we have this rivalry now, at least this potential rivalry set up that we can hopefully watch for years to come. Although, you know, who knows? Because with this, the modern golf swing, it seems to be causing a lot of injuries, at least for guys like McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day. It's like, yeah, great, these guys are all in great shape, but, you know, the way that they're swinging, by keeping the left foot planted, it just seems to put so much, you know, stress on your back that inevitably you're going to have some injury problems. So you hope that doesn't happen. But no, to say that, like, golf isn't exciting without Tiger Woods, I'm sorry, it is. Like, if you didn't think that this tournament wasn't fun just because Tiger Woods wasn't in it, well, you know what, I'm sorry, it's your loss.
Absolutely. I mean, if you can't appreciate this, I mean, can you even appreciate golf? I mean, this is a great tournament, and I don't think anyone would argue that if you are a true lover of the game. Other than that, then you're probably just a Tiger fan and not a golf fan, and that's a different situation altogether. So, well said, Mike. Let's go to John for final thoughts.
It's funny Mike brought that up, because I went over to my parents, like, kind of after the round had ended, just to stop by, and my dad said to me, you know who anyone didn't mention during this tournament? I'm like, who? He says, Tiger Woods. And we thought, you know, people said, oh, golf isn't going to be good, or is this the same? You know, no one mentioned hasn't mentioned his name in weeks or even months, you know, since he announced anything about surgery. But he's exactly right. That's exactly what Mike just said. I mean, the game is in a great place right now. And if you can't appreciate the stars and the players that are, you know, battling it out there in every major, then you're just, you know, you're not a golf fan. You were just a Tiger Woods fan. And that's fine. There's some people like that, but just don't call yourself a golf fan, because this is just some great stuff that's going on. And it just seems like all these guys that just turn pro have the ability to come out right on tour and win. You just look at John Rahm. I mean, last year he was just turning pro, and now he's 10th, and I think he's up to in the top 10 in the world and favorite to win majors. So it's just the amount of talent on the tour, and that's, you know, coming up. It's really impressive, and it makes for some, you know, exciting events, and you never know who's gonna be up there, and that's what makes it so interesting and so much fun to follow.
Yeah, that statement is so true, John. You truly never know who's going to be at the top with each major, with each week, and we tend to get some nice surprises every year. And this year has featured more of those surprises, and it's really awesome to watch. And a lot of youth in the game, a lot of young players that are very, very talented. And I think that's going to be a good draw for a lot of people who have been fans of the game of golf for a long time and will continue to be. So we're in a good spot, I think. And just as good a spot as chatting about it with the two of you. So, guys, enjoy. Have a good rest of your week. And we'll be back in about a month from now talking it up about the PGA Championship. I think there's going to be a lot of juice. Just call me crazy, but there could be a bunch of people going after that championship on the final round on Sunday. Hopefully, that's the case. I know my mush is powerful, but seriously, it looks like a good field. So, guys, take care. And all the best. We'll chat in a little bit. Thanks.
Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, fellas. Take it easy. So that's our program tonight. And just a reminder to everybody, we will be back tomorrow to cover the MLB trade deadline with Jerry and Piscataway and R in Philadelphia. But so for now, we'll sign off, but don't go too far because we'll be right back here on this podcast feed tomorrow. Good to have you listening tonight. Thanks again to John and Mike. Good times. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Don't go too far. We'll be back here tomorrow. We'll see you next time.